talking about our home. Talking about me and you. Things we'll do, I said our home.
Talking about our home.
Not talking about a one night stand. I wanna be your man, I said our home.
From the people who bring you Charleston Home and Design Magazine, the Charleston Home and Design Show, the Custom Home and Remodel Show, and Charleston's online home show, newhomecharleston.com. This is Talking About a Home. Talking About a Home is a home show on the radio, featuring interviews with local experts, home tips, trends, and ideas you need to know to make your home better. I'm Michael Blaze with Five Star Real Estate, and this is Talking About a Home.
Good afternoon. I'm Tim Barkley with Charleston Home and Design Magazine, and I want to thank you for listening to Talking About a home show on the radio. In addition to our radio show, Talking About a Home, we also publish Charleston Home and Design Magazine, winner of the American Society of Interior Designers Excellence in Design Media Award, and also winner of the American Institute of Architects Charleston Chapter's Honor Award for Journalism. You may also be familiar with the three custom home shows we organize, the Charleston Home and Design Show, which took place two weekends ago at the brand new Gilliard Center in downtown Charleston, the Charleston Home and Design Show on Daniel Island, which is coming up April 30th and May 1st, Saturday and Sunday, at Family Circle Stadium on Daniel Island, and also the Charleston Home and Design Show Fall Edition, which happens every August. Well, today we've got a special show for you. We're going to be taking you inside three different homes on the radio today. And if you're familiar with Charleston Home and Design Magazine, you know that we always have several local construction projects in our magazine, and always illustrated with beautiful photographs and top-notch writing. And what we do when we go out to these homes to do photo shoots is we also take some video while we're out there, and we interview the construction folks that are involved with the project. Sometimes we interview the homeowners and so forth. And so what you're going to be hearing today is the audio from several videos that we have shot over the past few months, and these projects are featured in Charleston Home and Design Magazine. And so, for example, California Closets was involved with a closet project on Sullivan's Island. You probably know Baker Motors. You've seen they do a lot of advertising. Tommy Baker and his wife Vicky, they realized that they had too many guest rooms, and they decided to convert one of those guest rooms into an amazing walk-in closet. And I guess it we referred to Carrie Bradshaw in the film Sex in the City about her obsession with shoes, and how this closet on Sullivan's Island is worthy of what you might see on Sex in the City. But just an amazing project, and you're going to be hearing from the folks at California Closet, Steve Rogers, about that. You're also going to be hearing the audio from a video that we did for Heritage Pools, and they did an amazing project on James Island, Mount Pleasant, for that. And they were responsible not just for the pool, it's the swimming pool itself, but also the outdoor living space that surrounds the swimming pool. And so we walk you right through the entire project. And what's interesting about what you'll hear in the interview is Heritage Pools has a unique way of constructing their pools that allows the swimming pool to hold up to some of our shifting ground that we have here in the low country. A lot of things settle in the low country here because we're so close to the ocean and so forth. And so they have a unique construction method that prevents any problems that you might have in the future with a swimming pool. And then also you're going to be hearing from the folks from Priester's Custom Contracting on a new house that was built on James Island. And we'll be hearing from Tommy Priester. And this was an interesting project in that the homeowners really loved the land and the location of their house, but they didn't love their house. And so their house was deconstructed and dismantled, and the outdated home was replaced with a brand new home. And so Tommy Priester with Priester's Custom Contracting will take us through that. And so you're going to be listening to the audio. You can watch these videos on our website, charlestonhomeanddesign.com. That's charlestonhomeanddesign.com. Or you can also pick up a copy of Charleston Home and Design magazine. And at the end of each story, there's a QR code, which is like a little barcode, and you could just whip out your smartphone and scan that code and watch that video on your smartphone as well. So you might get done reading one of these stories and want a little bit more information about the details of that project, and you can watch a video. So I want you to enjoy today's show, and it's going to be a very special one, and have a great weekend.
This is Erin Forbes with Charleston Home and Design Magazine. I'm here out on Wahoo Hall Road with homeowners Raymond and Magda Turner and Tommy Priester with Priester's Custom Contracting. How are you guys doing today?
Great.
Good. Doing good.
Awesome. Well, let me ask you guys, Raymond and Magda, how did you come to meet Tommy Priester of Priester's Custom Contracting?
We first met him actually at the Charleston Home Show. We were in the process of looking for a lot to build on, and so we interviewed Tommy and a handful of other contractors, and eventually settled in on Tommy just because we felt most comfortable with him. Mm-hmm. He had good references, but he was just a straight shooter, and we liked that about him.
Great. Awesome. And when you did find a lot, plans for the house?
Well, we kind of, having lived in low country for 6 years, we knew what we liked and what we didn't like. Mm-hmm. And one of the things when we were looking for a lot was ability to build a crawl space house. We didn't want a raised house anymore. Our way of living is the indoor-outdoor blending in. And it was very crucial to us to not have to deal with the stairs, because we had a raised house and out in Rivertown, and it was just not conducive to, and it didn't work for our family.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And so that was the main thing.
Yeah, we were looking for a place that was close to downtown, to lessen my commute. We certainly wanted to be on deep water. We've been boaters since moving down here, and that's important to us. And we learned a lot. You know, we had a great first house, and Tommy's been there, and he can test. I mean, it's a great house, but because it's raised 14 feet, we had a first floor master, and it didn't work for our lifestyle. And we wanted to be able to build something else custom that would fit our needs for our family.
Yeah, I think the key thing they told me when they met with me was that Ray was very adamant about not wanting any stairs. He wanted to walk out the back of the house right into the yard.
And, if possible.
And it just wasn't something we could do, but we made it where that when you do look out of the back of the house, you don't have handrail that's intrusive in the space, because he was so adamant that he wanted a clear shot view to the river and nothing intruding into that space. So that was a big deal for both of them, I believe.
Yep.
they looked for lots. For a year and a half, and numerous lots, and I remember getting a phone call, I called Ray or Ray called me one day and he says, we're thinking about being done. We're tired of looking for lots,
no.
and and we're just tired of it now, and because they were looking for a very specific lot with the ability to be, what, 5 minutes from MUSC, the ability to be where the kids do their activities, and deep water. Deep water was a major thing that they had to have, and we talked about it for, what was it, 5-10 minutes on the phone one day, and I said, Ray, I said, your scope is so narrow, you need to broaden the scope of what we're looking for, and he said, well, what do you mean? I said, well, why don't we buy an existing house and tear it down? And he says, oh, okay, bye.
Done.
So I think the next phone call was to the realtor.
Yeah,
hey, we've got a new path we're going to look now.
Yeah, it didn't even occur to me to tear down a house. I expected it to be really, really expensive. And, you know, Tom is like, no, I've done a couple of these before. It's actually fairly economical. And so if you can buy a distressed property on the land that you're looking for, there's a lot of advantages. You're buying a home, not land, so you're putting less money down.
Right.
And then what Magda decided was, once we bought the house that was here, we donated it to Habitat. And so they came in and took everything out of the house, the hardwood floors, every light fixture, every piece of copper, every wiring. And so we were able to help the community out by donating the house before we knocked it down.
And it was a big advantage for us in tax deductions.
Yeah, for sure.
So it was a win-win for everybody. Yeah. But see, when we were looking for the lot, because we lived in Mount Pleasant, I was like, I really want to stay in Mount Pleasant. And all the lots, and even the properties that then we started looking at, it was 7 figures, and we just said, we just can't afford that.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's just...
And there was usually too much compromise. You were getting a very
yes.
small lot
mm-hmm.
on sort of deep water, but there's always catches to it. And
and
so I forgot how we found this lot. I don't know if we found it or if Tommy found it, but it was unique in the sense that it had a very special home on it that probably depreciated the value of the land by a couple hundred thousand.
Well,
and so we were able to get a very good deal on the dirt by buying the house. Mm-hmm. And then we were able to knock down that house mm-hmm. and build what we wanted to build here. And there's a couple things we had to do. We raised the lot up by like a foot and a half maybe. Just so that we could decrease the gap between where the house is going to sit and where the land is going to mm-hmm. be, so we're not walking up too many stairs getting into the house.
Gotcha.
We kept that
yeah.
indoor-outdoor crawl space feel to it.
That's great. Yeah.
Well, and the house that was here was dear to the owner because mm-hmm. he built it himself.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So that was tough.
That was tough. And it's very known in the community, actually, because everybody knows the Geodome. And on James Island, it's like, the Geodome. Oh, yes, I know.
Yeah.
And now it's gone.
Yeah.
Sorry.
But we were upfront. We were upfront with him and saying that, you know, we have no intention of living here. We're going to tear it down. And they expected it, and they actually were very good about it. I think they were a little bit taken aback by how quickly we did it because we had it torn down within a week or two of purchasing it.
Yeah.
I think that took them a little bit by surprise. And then when we bought the house in front so that we could expand our front yard, again, I kind of told the homeowner, hey, I hope you don't have any sentimental attachment to this house up front because I'm going to tear it down. And he was like, please tear it down. It looks ugly.
Oh, no.
Get it out of the neighborhood. So it's actually worked out quite well.
Awesome. Great. Well, Tommy, let me ask you a couple of questions, I guess. When you come into a project like this, and like you said, you suggested that you come in and tear down a house, is that an easier way to approach a project, or is it... Because I know that you said that Raymond and Magda were looking for almost a year for an empty lot. Is that something that you generally suggest over looking for an empty lot?
It's all client-driven.
Yeah.
Ray had specific plans that he needed to be close to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And when you start narrowing that scope of lots down so much, the criteria was deep water. They didn't want title. Criteria was close to the hospital. There is only so much land that's here in Charleston. So it kind of forces you into that other avenue of looking for existing and either remodeling or tearing it down. And the code has changed so much now that all the houses that are existing are so far out of code, whether it be FEMA regulations or uplift for these storms that we have. I mean, we just didn't build houses to that standard until here recently. So it's getting so stringent that it just makes more economical sense not to try to remodel the house. It's better to tear it down. But then again, you find it, like I said, again, it's all client driven, because some clients have heirs property and they're very sentimental attached to the property. So in those cases, you have to kind of deal with what your cards you're handed and move forward that way. But in a lot of time, more often than none, it makes sense to tear down and build back.
When you meet a client, do you normally sit down and talk to them about, you know, what they want to do, as far as you said it was client driven? Mm-hmm. How do you go about that process with a new client?
Well, it depends on the client, but Ray and Magna, for instance, they called me and said, "Tommy, we want you to come see the house we live in now." Actually, when Ray met me at the home show, we talked for a good, I think, an hour and a half.
Yeah.
And he basically said at the home show, after we met, he says, "We will be in contact and you'll be building our house." And he just walked off. I'll get in contact with you. So he called me and out of the blue one day and says, "Hey, we want you to come look at our house because this is the similar quality to what we're looking for." And I think it's very advantageous for the client to do their due diligence as well. I think Ray said that he knew kind of right off who he wanted to deal with. And I mean, it's more than just building a house for a client. It's a long-term relationship. I think that we build that during the process to the point that where we've already been out in the boat together. We're going to have dinners together. And we have that long-term relationship to the point where hopefully we've built it over the year and a half. It took us a right at a year here, and then we knew each other a year and a half before that. So you build that relationship with your client. So I always tell people, make sure when you're picking your builder that you want to spend a lot of time with them, because you should be able to spend, you know, the duration of time with them as long as they're in the area, because they want to feel comfortable that we used trades in their home that are going to be here for the long term, that if she has any issue at all, or if they want to add something or they want to do an addition, that those same trade members are still here in Charleston. So it's a key thing, I think, as well in picking the builder, that they have a long-term relationship with all of their trades. That way the client feels secure that when they're out of town, for instance, I was out of town last week and Magna and Ray needed to talk to several people, and that happened just because very easily they can pick the phone up and call those trades because they've been here in Charleston for a long time. So all of those things, I think, play a big, big importance. And when you're picking a builder and a client, and there's a long-term relationship.
Yeah. And then he didn't hide those people. Like, you know, he didn't, well, you can't call the electrician, you know, I'll call it for you. It never was like that. It was always, here's the number, or, you know,
if you want to do it, fine.
Exactly.
If you don't, I'll
exactly. If you want me to do it, I'll do it. But, you know, here's the number for future or for whatever reason. Yeah. So it was never, you know, like he was hiding them, or, you know, they're my people, not, you know, your people kind of thing. Yeah, exactly.
You want your clients to discuss things with the trades, because it's their house. It's not my house.
It's not.
But so you want them to have an open relationship with those trades, because it's very important that they are translating things to the trades as they see that they need them. That way they have a relationship with not only me but them as well.
Right.
Yeah, it took me about, I think, 5 minutes to figure out Tommy was our guy. I mean, I deal with so many people every day as a physician. You can figure that out quite quite quickly with Tommy that he's a straight-up shooter. You're going to get his best. He's not going to take shortcuts. You'll always be able to find a cheaper builder. But you pay for that in the long run with revisions and having people having to come back and, you know, using, you know, questionable trade people that, you know, may or may not stay in the area. And with Tommy, you didn't have to deal with any of that stuff. Tommy took care of everything, and it's great because for that year, I think Tommy and I probably, I saw Tommy almost every day for a year, and someone would come up in the house, or there'd be a question, hey, Ray, can you come out here? I'd come out here, or I'd swing by the house here almost every day. Mm-hmm. I really dove into the building process, like, fascinated by how they do foundations, how they do the framing. And it was nice because Tommy was never like, okay, listen, you need to get away from here. This is my project. Tommy was always welcoming, hey, come on by, and always was patient with me with all the questions I asked. And oftentimes we would troubleshoot some weird, you know, issue that would come up because there's always going to be problems that come up. Whenever you're building a house, doesn't matter how big it is, there's always problems. And Tommy and I a lot of times would troubleshoot different issues of how do we want to deal with this, how do we want to address this, and what are the trade-offs, and how we're going to get the final product that we're looking for. And if you can't deal with your builder, if you don't like hanging out with your builder, you're going to have problems. And
it's going to be a painful problem.
Yeah. And so many key decisions were made over lunch at Corey's Grilled Cheese or at, you know,
Crust
or Tattooed Moose over a couple beers. And all right, this is what we're going to do.
Sounds good.
So the deal was, I always bought Tommy lunch and beer throughout the whole building process. And then Tommy buys me lunch and beer for the rest of my life afterwards. So it worked out pretty well.
Yeah. Get into that thing. Oh, goodness. Well.
See, but also what I liked about Tommy was whenever I would come up with something, like a idea, and he would always question it. For example, I wanted a well. He goes, but why? You don't need it. There's water. And he would always question it, but in a way that make sure that it was the right decision for us. Mm-hmm. You know, he would be like, but why you want to do this? You sure? What if we do this? Or what if we do that? So it was kind of like, Tommy, I know what I'm doing. I know. You know, I always needed to like justify myself with some of these decisions. But it was good because he was kind of like a sounding board.
Yeah.
So I think that's the key thing to building a house is, and I think I told you all that up front, that when you hire me, you hire me for all of my knowledge. Mm-hmm. And if I'm not giving all that to you, then you picked the wrong guy, because there's nothing I should hold back. So whenever you make a decision, my job is to give you pros and cons to that decision. And then move on the information that you give me. So, and I know that there were several times that she did say, why are you questioning me on this? I do want the well. I want it for these reasons. But I didn't mean for it to be, to feel offensive anyway. The purpose for it always is that, just like you said, that it questions what we're doing so that we know that we're doing the exact right thing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. In all aspects, whether it be trim, trim heights, and I mean you can go on and on, but everything that you do in building, you want to question that so that it gives you the opportunity to think through maybe things that you didn't think of.
Yeah.
That way you're not just making that decision and going, you know, if you would have only told me, then I would have probably rethought this. Mm-hmm. And that's the job of the builder. Mm-hmm. The builder's job is to guide you through the process, because if you don't build for houses every day, then there's things that you see that you should bring up so that the client doesn't make a possible mistake, because there's so many variables.
There's many things that we would simply not think about. You know, he would say, I can't think of anything right now, but it's like, but what if we, you know, this or the repercussion of that, mm-hmm. or whatever. Like,
well, I mean, the first one was probably the architect. You know, once he understood the scope of the project that we were going to do, he immediately, you know, was like, well, here's the name of two or three architects, and they're all extremely good, very well reputable, but they're also very expensive. And I said, Tommy, I said, you know,
as much as
this project is going to cost, I don't want to waste money in some place where I don't, you know, I want to put the money where it's going to be important. And so making a decision of going with a designer in Jody Crosby was great because not only was it much more economical, but allowed us to then put more money into the things that matter, which was the outdoor living space, the pool. You know, we completely tore out the old dock and put in a brand new dock. Mm-hmm. And you understand those trade-offs and where you can shift money around. And having those, you have to have those, be able to have those frank discussions with your builder and say, hey, Tommy, listen, you know, here's our budget. You know, this is not as important. Let's take money from there and let's apply it to this because this is a lot more important for us. Mm-hmm. And for sure. With our house, as you can see, the big point of this house is this living space from the inside that goes to the outside and the pool and the dock and the intercoastal waterway. It's not, look how magnificent the chandelier is in this dining room that we use once or twice a year. Yeah. The guest room in the front of the house, which is like an afterthought, to be quite honest with you. It's not important. Those are important discussions that we had. You know, the original design of the living room actually had a big curved glass window. And, yeah, it's beautiful. But I don't want to spend
$40,000
or $50,000 when, for a tenth of that or less, I can have nice three big windows, right?
Instead.
This large accordion door that we put in is 18 feet wide. That's a lot more cheaper than doing these sliding pocket doors, and it looks a lot better than having separated, like, sliding glass doors. This whole thing just opens up the whole view, you know, really quite nicely.
Well, you've got a whole wall of nothing but...
Right,
a door.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, a view
no
and a door.
No obstructions whatsoever.
Right.
Awesome, really awesome. Awesome picture they hung there, isn't it?
it's amazing. It's like moving. So lifelike. Exactly.
Yeah.
No, but when we were designing the house, that was the one thing that if I moved here from Ohio like we did, mm-hmm. And we're not originally from Ohio, so don't hate us. And just came in and started building a house, this would have looked completely different.
We would have mm-hmm. built like the first house we lived
we
in.
We would have probably
classic
lived,
Charlestonian,
right.
raised house, big grand southern mm-hmm. plantation style home.
Yeah, plantation yeah. shutters on the inside and all that stuff, you yeah. know. But having lived that, we're like, this is not us. This is not what we mm-hmm. want.
We wanted a little bit more of that Florida, like Mediterranean, mm-hmm. inside-outside living space because we do a lot of entertaining. And with little kids, we want them to be able to easily come in and out. We want to be able to keep an eye on them when they're outside. And you can't do that from 15 feet in the air. So this makes things a lot easier.
For sure. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, you mentioned that you guys had some discussion as far as different aspects of the home that you wanted to do, maybe not do. What were some of the other ones that you talked about that you probably... suggested to them, Tommy, were like, yeah, this that might work, but this might be easier.
Hmm.
Or more functional.
I don't think we ever had discussions like that just because...
We were pretty in sync.
We were... Yeah we really knew what we wanted, and it was just a matter of putting it on paper.
And we spent a lot of time together to begin with, like taking Tommy through our current house. Tommy, I like this wainscoting. I like these curved, you know, mm-hmm. the curved corners instead of the right angled corners.
But I don't like the disconnect of the dining room.
Right.
Even though we don't use the dining room, but we're sitting here, and let's say this is Christmas dinner. Mm-hmm. The kids can sit there, and they're still part of it, but they're not
right.
with the adults.
Yeah.
You know, they're not behind two walls. Okay. And that was the one thing that I was like, I need that togetherness. But far away. because you want to have an adult conversation, but you want to keep an eye on the kids. So and you want them to be like, they want to see you and be together.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
And the space allows for that. Where in the old house, it didn't work that way.
Certainly the back porch was an area where the back porch is 5 feet off the ground, roughly. And you go, Tommy, I don't want railings.
Mm-hmm.
Tommy's
right.
like, You can't not have railings. It's a code issue. You have to have railings. And so Tommy's suggestion was, well, let's build planter boxes, big, large, massive planter boxes around, and then we could shorten the height from the deck to the planter box. As long as we build them so far out, we don't need railings. And now we have an unobstructed view of
the
water.
But that was a team effort, too, because it was, all right, let's make sure that it's up to code. Let's talk to Jody. And, you know, it was all of... Because it wasn't just like, yeah, sure, do
and
it.
And it was also it was Tommy's idea, and then Ray built it.
That's right. Ray built all of it. He goes, Tommy, what do you mean? You're physician, you can pay somebody to do this. And Ray was like, no, but I want to do this. And he did it all, and the trades were here, and they're like, but you're the owner. Like,
the trades loved it.
Well, I don't understand why you're doing this yourself. Ray's like, I want to put my stamp on the house.
And the guys at Lowe's love the fact that I'm throwing like all this cinder block and block of wood and all this stuff in the back of an Audi. I became relatively famous at Lowe's.
they got to know him over a couple of weeks, for sure.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah,
but yeah, there were things that Ray was like, I can do this, I'll do it myself. Like the lower deck he built. He built the fireplace.
Wow. I did the foundation for the fireplace.
He did the foundation, and they were talking, and it was like, okay, you need to do this and this, and, you know, so it was a little bit of a guidance, but Ray did it, you know, all by himself, and so he wanted to put a little bit of, I did it. It wasn't just, I paid somebody to do it.
You live here.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah. So, and it's still standing.
It's perfect. If anything, I over-engineered it.
That should be everything. So thank you guys for joining us. Thank you again, Tommy Priester, for coming out and talking to us. And we appreciate having you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm Megan Bush with Charleston Home and Design Magazine. And today I got to return to a project that Charleston Home and Design has been to before. So back in 2012, we featured the house of Tommy Baker of Baker Motor Company. And since then, he's done a little bit of remodeling. Particularly to one of his guest bedrooms. So I caught up with Steve Rogers of California Closets, as well as Elizabeth Gum, the Well-Coif Closet. And we are here on Sullivan's Island to talk about this new addition to Tommy Baker's house. How are you guys doing today?
Great. How are you?
Doing very well, thanks.
Fantastic. Well, I am particularly interested in Tommy Baker's wife, Vicky's closet. Okay, how did you guys approach this project? It's, you know, a brand new remodeled space in Tommy Baker's house. What do we have? What does it look like?
Well, really, Elizabeth was the driving force behind this project, and she brought me in on the project in order to look at Vicky's closet.
Yeah, it was a guest room prior to the dressing room that it is now. And the closet that she had before wasn't able to contain all of the beautiful pieces that she has. And so she was really interested in enlarging. And then the idea of creating the closet out of the guest room came. And again, like Steve had said, I had met him probably a year ago and called you on board, and it just took off from there.
Well, Steve and Elizabeth, what are kind of the most important elements of this closet? Steve, would you be able to walk us through what California Closets did, and then Elizabeth, what the Well-Coif Closet did to pull everything together?
You want to start?
Sure.
Whenever Ms. Baker and I had started kind of brainstorming about her closet, what was so important to her was, I mean, obviously her home is breathtaking and stunning and beautiful setting, and she wanted her closet to be the same way. And she wanted to walk in and have this sanctuary and this place that she could just go in and relax and shut the door and have all of her beautiful things in front of her. And the closet prior,
those shoes.
Yeah. The shoes, the dresses. I mean, you could just stay in there for hours. The closet before that, just, it wasn't big enough for all of her pieces. And so when her and I started talking about, you know, what is it that you like? What things have you seen before? We started kind of a little Pinterest board and passing ideas back and forth. And of course, keeping up with the white, clean and marble aesthetic was very important. But also the design of it. And I knew that aesthetic that she wanted and that design was not something that, you know, any carpenter could do. And it had to require a professional, which is why we brought Steve on. And what was so amazing about him and working with him was that he was able to create these plans, and we were able to see them, you know, in like the 3D, 4D on the computer. And we were able to tailor and you know, customize everything the way we wanted it to do and see it before any of it was put into stone. I think that was the most comforting thing from her, because we literally took a guest room and turned it into a closet. I mean, there are two full windows on this side that are covered up, and the big bay window is partially covered up. So it was a big decision.
Yes,
a lot of the things that we decided on, I mean, they were do we cover up these two windows? Do we not? And because he has that system that he's able to create those image layouts, we were able to make a lot of great decisions with California closets.
Mm-hmm. It's really nice because it's so hard to tell on blueprints, like what something's going to look like. But when you have that 3D image or that 4D image, it's so much more clear.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Steve, in that image, what are the different features that California closets put into the closet? So if like you were standing there and just gave me like a walkthrough of what these different cabinets and pullouts are, what would you have?
So this was a really fun project that Elizabeth and Miss Baker took some ideas from Howe's and from other inspirations, and we sat down and kind of figured out how we could incorporate those into the closet. Some of the things we did, the closet system is where the hanging clothes are all 24 inch deep. So everything is housed, everything is encased in the cabinetry.
So nothing's hanging out.
That's correct.
Okay.
The vertical panels are 1 inch thick as opposed to 3/4 or 5/8 or what have you. So it adds a little bit more of a solid look to the closet. Mm-hmm. It's all built up to the ceiling with trim that is built to the ceiling. So it really has a very built-in look. The upper row of cabinets are lift-up cabinets for storage. And Elizabeth's idea was to put puck lights inside those cabinets and make the doors glass. So they really display a lot of Miss Baker's handbags around the room. So that was a really neat element.
Display case. Why is it important that the cabinets are lift up? Does that make it simpler to access?
It does. It makes it simpler to access. And we have hinging that allows you to lift it and then you let go and it holds the door in place. So it allows you to take things in and out of the cabinet easier. And I think the aesthetic too is more interesting than just your standard swing doors. Another element that we did in this closet, because we were concerned closing off two of the windows, that lighting was going to be an issue. So we included lit hanging rods.
Okay.
So all of the poles have lights underneath that light up the clothing below them.
You can tell the difference between black and navy blue.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. And it really makes that easy to see what's inside the closet. And where the shoe shelves are, we ran strip lighting up and down the sides of the verticals. So those lights also, they light up all of the shoes. All of the lighting in the closet is controlled by sensors at the front of the closet. When you walk in, you wave your hand and all of the lights go on.
Oh, magic.
So it's pretty neat. Yeah.
All that lights up. I think if I think about my own closet, it seems like the accessories are like the hardest things to store. So what did you guys do with like jewelry and sunglasses and scarves and that kind of stuff?
Again, Elizabeth brought some really neat ideas to the table, and some of these things we had not done quite to this extent before. We did sunglass drawers with organizers and felt liners on the bottom. For jewelry, we did an array of jewelry inserts with a bottom layer and then top layer inserts that slide back and forth. And we did a scarf rack, a pull-out scarf rack. It's a cabinet that pulls straight out, and there's four or five rows of scarves.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like a spice rack pull that you would see in a kitchen, but that
holds the scarves.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, and that was very important to her, the scarf rack, the sunglasses and the jewelry, and making sure they weren't all, lumped into a jewelry box. They were able to be displayed, and it's beautiful what they were able to do.
It is. And this closet in particular is a huge project. We're taking a whole room and turning it into a project. So I imagine it took a while to complete everything, but how long would a typical closet project take?
A typical closet would be usually a couple days in the design process and about 3 to 4 weeks in the shop, and then maybe 1 day, 2 days perhaps of installation. This however was a much more larger complex job. With Elizabeth and I working together, the design process was about how long?
About 2 months.
About two months.
Yeah, and and taking those ideas back to Mrs. Baker and you know, tweaking those. And yeah, that was a good 2 months, and then probably a 2 month install.
Yeah, it was about going back and forth. Yeah, some of the elements in this we installed and then wanted to tweak them, took them out, and then reinstalled them. So it was quite a process.
And I think it's important for people to understand that when you do want something highly customizable, and everybody wants it customizable to their own taste, but not this was over and beyond, but when you get into wanting, you know, certain elements, it is like not building a house, but, you know, there are going to be things that are going to take a little bit longer, and
trial and error too.
Yeah, there's trial and error. And I was going to say earlier when we were talking about, you know, actual built-ins versus, and I know these are built-ins, but built-ins that are not adjustable versus California closet. The beauty about this entire project, I feel like, is that the trial and error process allowed us to put everything in. And then if there was a certain row of shoes, you know, I'm sure you saw the Prada mules, there's a whole row of those. If that one little area in the shoe closet needed to be higher than the other, it was all customizable. And I think, you know, that's just so important, because you just don't know a lot of times what you're going to be getting into, just like building a house. So I guess in saying that, sometimes it, you know, it'll take a little bit longer than expected.
But if you want it to be perfect, it's worth it.
And it's perfect.
Yeah. So it certainly is. Speaking a little bit more generally, Elizabeth, what do you think some of the best organizing tips for a homeowner wanting to just bring some order to their closet, or bring some sanity to the craziness of those storage areas? What advice would you give to those homeowners?
My basic advice, which I employ myself, is creating seasonal closets, number one, if you have the space. So keeping your, you know, current season's pieces together, and then maybe storing heavier pieces in another closet, so you free up a lot of what is in your actual existing closet, because it's a kind of rule of thumb that you only wear about 10% of what's in your closet, because you just kind of habitually go to those certain little things. And another thing too is, and I know people probably do this, but categorizing your pieces. Button-down shirts go with button-down shirts. Tanks go with tanks, you know. And then I go as far as to color coordinate them. I try to do it for my husband, but he doesn't keep it. It doesn't stay that way. But I try to for him. But I think another thing, too, is drawers. Drawers are always an issue because, you know, you have PJs or, you know, undergarments, and they just all get lumped in. And you can get these shelf dividers. California Closet does these awesome acrylic ones. And so just even if your socks aren't all organized perfectly, they're in the sock section, you know. the tanks are in the tank section. So just in your own way, creating some kind of order, you know, with the pieces that you have is so important, because the closets can be so frustrating.
They can, and sometimes it's just starting small. Like, all right, I'll put all my dresses here.
Exactly.
And then maybe a few weeks later, all right, I'll organize my shirts.
Yes, exactly.
All right, so also if a homeowner wanted to redo their closet completely, so maybe take out some of those old wire shelves and put in an actual California closet, mm-hmm. What do you think are the most important elements for them to focus on? And what are the kind of special features that people get excited about?
Yeah. That's a very good question. I mean, I think that the most basic elements are your what they call long hang, your short hang, double hang, shelves, drawers, baskets, and those kind of things. So you do want to, if you are approaching this project, what Elizabeth said, first off, pull out from your closet what you're not wearing and what you're not using regularly, and then inventory what you are going to keep in the closet. And that's part of what we do if you want help with that. And then we recommend different ways to store things depending on what the garment is. So, you know, shorter garments together, mid-length garments together, long garments together. you know, typically hanging from the bottom and shelves above. It helps with depth and visual and so forth. And then, you know, again, like Elizabeth said, with drawers, you know, we recommend honestly as few drawers as possible, because once things go into a drawer, you can't see them, right?
Yeah. Right. It's easy to stash stuff in there when you're cleaning quickly.
Exactly. Yeah. So for things like undergarments and socks, drawers are great, but, you know, we prefer open shelves or even cabinet doors for folded clothes, because you can see your entire selection then, as opposed to just the thing on the top.
Right.
I think as far as what people get most excited about, what I hear most often is as they're putting things back into their closet, how much space they suddenly, they realize they have now. And our response is usually, I have more space than I have clothes now. So that's always a nice compliment. Accessory-wise, I think, you know, things like the jewelry inserts and the drawer dividers are great, because that really then takes it to the next level, where you open a drawer and you have your, you know, dress socks in one column and athletic socks in another column and so forth.
Right. All right. Well, anyone interested in reorganizing or getting a new closet, Steve, how do they contact California Closets? And then Elizabeth, how would they contact you?
We are, our phone number is 843-762-7980. Our website is californiaclosets.com, and we are opening a showroom, in October at 704 South Shelmore Boulevard, in Mount Pleasant.
Great. You can stop by. And then Elizabeth, yes. Wallcloth Closet.
Yes, you could reach me at 843-860-5410, and then our website is wellcoiffedcloset.com, and that's COIFFED, wellcoiffedcloset.com. And is it okay if I add a little bit about what it is that I do?
Certainly, I'd be happy if you did.
So I'm a personal stylist, and this has been one of the most amazing projects I've worked on, absolutely. But what I also do is, my component of what I do is organizing and, you know, helping people arrange their closets, and now building closets, not myself, but with California
with
Closets.
Help.
Yeah. But being a personal stylist, I go into people's homes and help them with their style and their looks, and helping people define what their style is, you know, whether they be in a slump of some sort, or, you know, they've gotten to a certain age where they don't know if things are appropriate to wear. And so I go in and spend about 4 to 6 hours with clients and help them figure out what their personal style is. And then I love personal shopping for them. A lot of times I just do the shopping for them. But really, it's just a lot of confidence building and helping people, you know, feel beautiful. And
what a fantastic job.
It's a lot of fun. And I love to make lookbooks for people as well, where I'll take the pieces in their closet rather than going on a big shopping trip, but take the pieces in their closet and say, well, you haven't worn this in so many years. Why don't you put a belt around this or add a skirt to this? And then so they really do kind of have whole new pieces just by having a, you know, another eye come in and see their pieces. So, the personal styling, the organizing, and personal shopping, it's a lot of fun. I love it.
Well, you do it all. That is fantastic. Well, thank you both for inviting us in today back to Tommy Baker's house, and thank you for letting our readers get a look into this awesome closet.
Thank you, Megan.
Thank you so much.
This is Erin Forbes with Charleston Home and Design Magazine. I'm here on site with Captain Dave Westberg and Michael Gesman of Heritage Pools. Michael, tell us a little bit about the process of what homeowners can expect when they're designing and or installing a pool with Heritage Pools.
So when our customers call us to design and build a new swimming pool, generally our standard procedure is to come into the office so we can sit down with our potential homeowners and go over their backyard ideas, and they bring their plat, a survey at that time, so we can kind of draw some ideas on CAD and come up with what's the best design for your backyard. And then really once we kind of do that first consultation, then we will come out to the site and show the homeowner, you know, through painting in the backyard, what this pool is going to look like. And when we go out there, we're trying to make sure that we're not going to have any kind of issues with water issues or power line issues or just the normal things that happen in Charleston with ground instability and some of those problems that we have in Charleston.
Can you elaborate a little bit more about the particular problems that one might encounter while installing a pool here in Charleston?
Yeah, so typically in most yards when you excavate a pool, you're going to find that you're going to have groundwater or just undesirable dirt. And what happens is when you take pools and you try to put them in this undesirable dirt in these high water tables, you get where you get hydrostatic pressure pushing underneath these swimming pools. And you get ground settlement, so which can lead to cracks or pools popping out of the ground.
That's no good.
No. So what we've done is we've come up with a different type of pool that's adapting to Charleston's ground problems, where we're actually building a wall and a footing and a brace and foundation for the actual structure of the pool to be resting on. So it's not just sitting in dirt. So kind of like a house foundation when you're building a home.
Yeah, that's a great way. What were your goals for the design of your specific pool, and what in particular helped you decide to work with Heritage Pools?
Well, first of all, we weren't sure what kind of pool we wanted, whether we wanted a kidney-shaped pool, a rectangular-shaped pool, a sport pool, and when we discovered Michael and Heritage Pools on the internet, we contacted them, and actually Michael came to us and he looked at our backyard and he discussed what type of pool layout would be best for our particular backyard situation. That being said, I told him that when it was all done, this was the both Kim and I wanted a pool, and this is our first pool in our entire lifetime.
Oh, fun.
And so we wanted this to have a wow effect. And there was, you know, a lot of people over the past 18 years that have been through this house and have seen this backyard. And those people have since been through the house and now seen this addition on our backyard, which is a whole nother living area for us. It's an outdoor living area, and and he has achieved this goal of giving it the wow effect.
Awesome. And you mentioned about how Heritage Pools creates basically an earthquake-proof, quote-unquote, pool, and that was a big deal for you guys. Why is that?
Well, here in Charleston, when I'm not flying airplanes, I get to do historical cruises for Charleston Harbor Tours, and so I happen to know that there's an earthquake tremor there's an earthquake fault line that runs through Charleston, and so we have 20 to 50 earthquake tremors here a year. That they're so small that most people don't even notice them. But one of the things that attracted me to Heritage Pools was the fact that they built this earthquake-proof pool. It's there's three steps to it. First of all, they pour a foundation. Then there's a composite liner that goes around the side, and then there's a liner that goes in on top of it, so it's virtually leak-proof. And if we have any kind of an earthquake tremor here in the Charleston area, you could develop a crack in a totally concrete pool, and you're going to have a leak, and you're going to have all kinds of problems. So that particular design, the I-beams that they have going around the edge of the pool, was very interesting to me, and I thought it was a really good design.
For sure, and a good choice considering all the bad soil that we have here in Charleston too. Okay, Michael, so what can you tell us about this pool in particular that we're looking at?
So going back to Dave's original request, was he wanted people to come in this backyard and have the wow factor.
Right.
So what we've done is we actually brought in some custom limestone and some pavers and a custom raised wall with a to give him this wow effect in his backyard with some custom lighting and entry levels into the swimming pool.
Yeah. You guys achieved the wow factor for sure in the backyard. Tell me a little bit about the features that helped achieve that wow factor.
So starting with the pool, what we've done is we've made a full-on width entryway to the swimming pool. Mm-hmm. So they can walk down into their pool and they can also lounge in their pool on this bench, step entry. And then coming outside of the swimming pool, we brought in some custom limestone to complement the outside edge of the pool for the coping. And then what we've done is on the back end of the swimming pool, we made a raised planter wall that also acts as where you can sit down for a bench. Mm-hmm. And inside this planter wall, we've put a palm tree and lights and different types of plants there to achieve his wow factor. And then on the shallow end of the pool, we put in a custom fire pit.
Awesome.
So they can enjoy some fires in the wintertime when they're not swimming.
And Michael, Heritage Pools also offers full maintenance packages. You have a different range of options. What are those different options that you guys offer?
So we don't build any pool knowing that we're going to be keeping a customer where he's going to be obligated to buy a maintenance package. Mm-hmm. All of our pools, we use state-of-the-art equipment. For instance, if you want a salt system or ionization or whatever type of sanitization you want to use. But we try to build these pools to where they're as maintenance-free as possible so any customer can manage their own swimming pool. Mm-hmm. Now, sometimes customers cannot do that, or if they're out of town or they just can't tend to their swimming pool. So that's where Heritage Pools can step in, and we will provide our customers with either weekly or bi-weekly or monthly service to upkeep their swimming pool and equipment mm-hmm. in their backyard.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned that, you know, there are a lot of people in Charleston that are out of town on a regular basis. What about the other people that prefer maintenance packages? Why do you suggest that other homeowners who are here all the time get one of those maintenance packages?
So really it comes down to just having that carefree backyard. I mean, a lot of people want to just jump in the swimming pool and that's all they want to do. They don't want to take care of the swimming pool, and that's really where we come in and we can handle that. But going back to the beginning, the best thing that we can do is inform customers, pool owners, the public on how to take care of swimming pools so they don't have issues. Mm-hmm. And by doing that, we feel that that's really what our big approach is for. We love to maintain pools. We maintain a lot of pools, and we'll absolutely do them. And like I said, for a lot of people that don't want to do anything with their swimming pool, that's where we come in and we maintain that pool for them so they can just simply swim in the pool and enjoy the raft in the sun.
And Dave, you guys have a maintenance package with Heritage Pools, correct?
That's correct.
Awesome. What does that entail?
Well, we have the ionization style pool, which is basically something like an electrolysis type thing.
It's a chlorine alternative, so we're not adding a lot of chlorine because unfortunately chlorine works and is a very effective sanitizer, but there's a lot of negatives to it. Mm-hmm.
So in addition to that, we did get the weekly package because okay. This is a tremendous investment for us, and it's something that when we sink this kind of money into a pool, we definitely want to take good care of it.
Oh,
so,
for sure.
Michael's weekly maintenance plan involves them coming over here, and they will blow off the deck area there, and they will skim the pool. They clean the bottom of the pool. Basically, it's pristine when he leaves, and they check mm-hmm. the chemical balance. So it's there's nothing for us to do.
That's great. Well, this has been Aaron Forbes with Charleston Home and Design with Michael and Dave. Thank you guys for joining us so much.
I'm talking about a home. Talking about me and you. The things we'll do. I said a home. I'm not talking about a one night stand. I want to be your man. I said a home.
You've been listening to Talking About a Home, a home show on the radio. Talking About a Home is brought to you by the publishers of Charleston Home and Design Magazine and the organizers of the Charleston Home and Design Show and the Custom Home and Remodel Show. To make contact with any of the companies featured today, visit newhomecharleston.com, Charleston's online home show, and home to over 200 local home-related companies motivated to work with you.